Hello and welcome to the Heckle Revolution. This week's show is a special crossover with the Agile Revolution because we have Craig joining us. So how are you going, Craig?
I'm doing well. What did you say up to? 130. We're only up to episode 90-something. No, let's just call it episode 9X of the Agile Revolution. So, yeah, great to be joining forces again with the podcast that takes the Agile world and Hack and Heckle, which talks about all the cool stuff going on in tech. So very exciting.
Yeah, it's funny how those numbers creep up, isn't it?
It is. How long have you guys been going now?
Oh, a couple of years now.
We're
probably on year three.
Yeah, we're about the same. We're creeping very close to episode 100. I think this will be episode 98, I think.
Yeah, I think if we actually counted every episode we've released, we're considerably more than 130 something. But some of the Yao ones and stuff we haven't given number to.
So we cheat is what you're telling us.
If I would cheat, we probably could. If we were out for numbers, we could probably be higher.
There you go.
Yeah.
Anything special planned for episode 100?
We're giving it some thought. We're actually in two minds. Do you make a big deal about episode 100, or you just keep powering on? But I don't know. We'll see what happens. A few things we've been throwing around.
Yeah, ours was pretty unceremonious, so.
Yeah, well, we only really realized when we were doing the show notes, we were about to record. It was like, hey, this is show 100.
Oh, yeah, so you didn't have the dancing girls or the free car giveaway or anything?
No.
No, nothing like that. So, Craig, what have you been up to over the last year? We haven't obviously spoken to you since 2014, our conference. So,
has it been a whole year? I think the last time we saw each other was we were both running at different ends of the conference center trying to run after speakers and barrel them down.
Yeah.
And you know, I probably shouldn't say this on the podcast, but the embarrassing thing is we've actually got, I think, two interviews we still haven't released from Yale last year. So one of them only just went live the other day. So we've just been filtering them out, and they've
but they're timeless, Craig.
They are indeed. Yeah, we don't put any dates or anything on there. So who knows when they record. But what's happened in the last year? My other work away from things like Yao is in the Agile field. So been very busy coaching teams and doing training and those type of things. And keeping the eye on the ball with Yao. And we've had a few conferences this year. Again, our Yao West conference in Perth, Yao Connected, which is our mobile conference in Melbourne, and Lambda Jam, our functional programming conference in Brisbane. So and now we're all gearing up towards Yao 2015 again,
the big one.
Well, Yao 2015 is looking good. So we just noticed before that the program with not just the speakers but also the talks they'll be presenting is up on the site now as well.
Yeah, they actually always were up. You just needed to have a degree in rocket science to figure out how to get to them. So yeah, a little easier to get to.
Yeah, well, we find it now. We didn't find it before.
Well, you expect
I saw the stickers.
You expect when there's a button when there's a button that says program that you could click that and see a program, right? That's the typical thing.
Mm.
But it's actually one of the things people often ask us, why does the actual program itself take so long to get out? As you know, with Yao, it's 39 odd speakers, international speakers, and sometimes you're just not sure when they're landing or where they're going. And we try to support user groups and some of the other conferences around the place. So the whole scheduling of a three-city, 2-week conference like this is actually quite difficult. So
I don't think many people appreciate it.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's tough to schedule a conference anyway. I mean, anyone who's done scheduling of things like of schools or conferences or things, it's tough at the best of times. But when you've got, 39 keynote quality speakers and trying to make sure that you're not, crossing too many like things over. I mean, there's still three talks going on at any one time, and people are always going to be disappointed. But trying to come up with something where, the speakers are complementary to each other and the people are also in the right city at the right time is all a bit of a challenge. But if it was easy, everybody would be
there. How do you line it up out of interest? Like, do you do speakers first and then work out their talks? You kind of look, you ask them around who's seen some talks from them before, or do both?
So how are the speakers selected for Yao?
Do you ask the talk first or the speaker first?
Typically it's the speaker. So what actually happens is Yao Yeah, it's different to a lot of traditional conferences in that all the speakers are invited as opposed to something that goes out for proposal. So there's an independent programming program committee that's made up of from a number of people throughout the world who actually are looking out for this conference, as well as some of our sister conferences like GoTo and other conferences around the place. And typically it's speakers or topics that I guess are known to be perhaps either on the cutting edge, or speakers who've made a bit of an impact, or have just been entertaining or had something good to say. That's typically where the speakers come from. So at the beginning of the year, they start to put together a bit of a log from that, as well as suggestions that we take from people who come to the conferences throughout the year as well. We've always got a suggestion box. So between those two things, typically the speaker has been looked for and then narrows down. Quite often it's just what they're interested in talking about, because the speakers on their own usually stand on their own right. It's just then the topic that perhaps they're wanting to talk about.
Okay, cool. So is there a particular focus for this year's conference, or are you just trying to get a good spread across all the different topics for you?
It's always about getting a good spread. There's speakers that some speakers we've been trying to get for years. There's a couple that we've actually got this year that that we've sort of finally been able to convince to make the trip. There's obviously some old favourites, people speakers who've asked who we've been asked to bring back again for a second or sometimes a third time. So and it's just about getting a spread across the realm of software development. So there's a spread of mobile talks, of functional talks, of languages talks. We've got some pretty good not .NET Microsoft people, as well as some good Java people, and then some of the complementary things like DevOps and big data and those type of things as well.
Yeah. Well, I saw Adrian Cockcroft just back, and it's pretty exciting to see his talk. I enjoyed the one I saw of him last time.
Yeah, well, since then, obviously, Adrian Cockcroft was the cloud architect at Netflix, so very well known for all the AWS and cool stuff they did behind the scenes there. And just after the conference, when he was back out here in 2013, he then took on a new gig at Battery Ventures. And so I think he now calls himself a technology fellow, but he's built upon what he was doing at Netflix and is really taking a good look at what's happening in the the cloud world in general.
Yeah, I'd be glad to see what he's doing now. I'm quite looking forward to his talk.
Yeah, his talk's called It's Complicated, which I'm not sure whether that means his talk is complicated or just scaling is complicated. I think it's the latter, but
it does look good.
But yeah, so you think about something like Netflix and how I'm sure people at the beginning of that whole process sat there and went, you have to be kidding. Why are you doing this kind of stuff? And I think someone who's got that kind of vision is someone really good to always listen to. He's always got a good message.
Yeah.
So speaking of talks, guys, are there any other ones on this program that you kind of are interested in?
I really enjoyed Troy Hunt's one last year. The hacking one, so I'm looking forward to see what his is, because I do like some of the security stuff, as well as Aaron Bedra. Sorry,
yeah, I was keen at Aaron Bedra as well. I did his workshop, was it a year or two ago, on security. Mm. So I'm pretty keen to see what he's got to say this time around. He's always been pretty interesting to see.
Security is such a sexy topic, isn't it? You could just talk about anything, and people will flock to it.
Well, yes and no. To some techs it is, but to other
for
people.
Nerds like us, Darren.
Yeah, I know.
I don't know, but you need a good speaker to talk about security, don't you? I mean, that can be an extremely dry topic if you're not careful.
Yeah, true.
People like Aaron and Troy do a really good job of bringing it to the masses and getting people actually interested in it.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, I hope they do good performances, you know what I mean? So
yeah,
I think there's more than just knowing your stuff. You have to be put on a good performance, know where you're going to go with it, know where you're going to drop some comedy lines or whatever, and those two are pretty good at that.
Yeah.
So you're dead on, Craig, about the distilling it down for the masses, because Troy Hunt's blog is just like, it's just unbelievable the way he breaks down like various attacks and hacks that have occurred out in the internet, and it's the sort of stuff that I can link through to people and they get a good grasp of what it's all about without having a technical background specifically.
Yeah, and I know last year at the conference I sent even the people who do the registrations and things at the conference. They said, by the time they got to Brisbane, they said, oh, look, things are going okay. Is there anything you recommend I go see? And one of them I said is go and see Troy Hunt. And they went, why do I care about security? And I went, yeah, just do yourself a favor. Sit in the back. You can walk out after 10 minutes if you don't think much of it. And they were buzzing. And these are people who don't do technology for a living. So, getting an appreciation of that. And so someone who can, when we did our Vox Pops at the conference last year, everybody was talking about that talk. And it was one that just everybody got something out of.
Hmm. Yeah. I see we got quite a lot of microservices stuff again as it continues to dominate sort of architectural principles at this point.
Yeah, I'm a little microservice out, to be honest with you. I'm not sure how many, but honestly, it's still one of those things that people are talking about. And you asked before, where did the talks come from? Quite often, we put it out there to speakers to say what do they want to talk about. I think what we try to do this year is again try to get a bit of a breadth at the conference. So having someone like James Lewis, who is kind of one of the, I guess, the forefathers of microservices from ThoughtWorks, along with our own Sam Newman, this year has released his O'Reilly book, Building Microservices. But then we've got a couple of other sort of people. So we've got people like Indu Algasami from Particular Software. So she works quite closely with people like Udi Dahan, who quite often talk about SOA and DDD and those type of things. And then people like Matt Heath from Mondo, which is very much more looking at things like Go and how microservices are done there. So and Randy Shoop, who's also been around in the industry for a long time, formerly at places like eBay and Google. So yeah. I think it's a lot about getting some different perspectives. And I think this whole thing with microservices is it's one of those things where it's not the be all and end all. It's not the answer for everything, but keeping things loosely coupled is an extremely important thing.
Yeah. So as you were just mentioning there about some books, I also see you've got Dave Thomas, Pragmatic Publisher. Prag Dave, because I'm a Ruby guy, so I've seen him for a long time.
I'm very excited about that. I've never seen him speak before, and he's obviously, having written or co-written the Pragmatic Programmer, pretty influential book in the software development community. I'm very excited to see him.
Yeah, that's one of my top 10 books that when people people come to me, and even from an agile perspective, when people come and say, what should I read? If a new graduate comes up to me, there's been ones written in the same vein since, but it still holds up extremely well, that book.
Yeah, it definitely
absolutely
does.
Yeah, I pull it out every couple of years and just flick through it again.
Yeah, I can see it on my bookshelf right now. In fact, I feel like going over there and flipping through it again.
It's funny you say that. I'm staring at my bookshelf right now, and it's there also.
My bookshelf's not in this room at the minute, so I can't look at it. But I was looking towards the bookshelf. He has got a good bit of cash out of me through the Prague publishing stuff. It was nice to actually have another place to get books rather than just O'Reilly.
I think I bought Pragmatic SVN or something at one point. I'm just trying to find the Pragmatic published books. I'm sure it's a Pragmatic Git.
That's fine. You can keep that one.
You can keep that one. Pragmatic SVN. Yeah.
It might have even been a Pragmatic version crossing CVS.
Oh wow!
Was there actually Pragmatic CVS? There was. Yes, I think I bought Pragmatic version control using CVS.
Yeah. So we're just showing our age, guy.
Yeah.
Yeah. You can tell a software developer's age just by what version controls they've used.
Yeah. Well,
yes.
I'm sure they didn't write Pragmatic Visual Source Safe though.
Did they write Pragmatic RCS?
Ah.
Yeah, but the other thing I noticed, Craig, is you've got quite a lot of women speakers this year. I was pretty keen to see Bodil Stock, if that's how you pronounce her name. She seems a very entertaining speaker from what I've seen of her other presentations.
Yeah, I mean, it's always been... first and foremost, you always go for the best speakers, but But we've always usually the amount of females that we invite is usually half or even a third of the ones that actually end up on the program, just because usually just speakers in general actually making the trip from Europe or North America across to Australia is a big undertaking at the best of times.
Surely you can sell them as
Well, that's how we do. Sure, we say, come
to Australia for a summer holiday.
Yeah, that's right. So for a lot of them, that's enticing. But for some of them, with particularly a lot of the speakers who have young families, some of them just don't wish to travel. And that's no different for the male or female speakers. So it's always been a part of sort of what we're looking for, is having a good diversity of speakers and, from different backgrounds, different countries, those type of things to make it a full conference. But, yes, we've been it's been good this year that we've probably got more of the percentage that we invited actually accepting, which is great.
Yeah, so I'm pretty keen to see the Anita from NASA. That I think that's had a bit of a coup, that one in particular.
Yeah, that looks pretty awesome, doesn't it? So if you haven't seen the website, Anita Singhgupta is an engineer at the NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory. So I'm sure that actually makes her able to say she's a rocket scientist. But someone who actually coded on something that actually went to Mars, so she was behind the some of the code that on the Curiosity rover. That's pretty awesome. So I think sometimes we get hung up on the technical challenges that we have, just deploying something from here to here. I think you just have to be in awe listening to someone like her who has to cross their fingers that the code is going to work from so far away.
Yeah, a data center is not far away.
That's right.
You can't run up a new satellite, you can get a new cloud.
Yes, that one looks pretty cool.
No, there's no cloud. There's no cloud on Mars, Darren.
There's no cloud. There's no water. Not yet. We'll get some clouds. Oh, that's a bad pun. Anyway, I'm really looking forward to see what she has to say because, it gives us a different aspect. Like some of the other stuff, what they're doing with the tech is cool, but when it's something very different, like a real different application being space travel, I just think that's amazing. I'd work for less money to go do something like that.
Yeah, but although I'm sure they pay that job quite handsomely, so I don't think that would have to be a concern. But yeah, it's just that coolness factor, isn't it? I know when I went to NASA a few years ago, I bought a NASA polo shirt, and you'd be surprised the amount of times I can wear that out sometimes, and people just come up to me and go, "Wow, do you work for NASA?" And I have to stop myself from going, "Well, yes, I'm an astronaut. Thank you."
No, I'm just a NASA fanboy.
That's right.
I'm a spy. I just took the t-shirt when I was there. But yeah, that's pretty cool. So is there anyone in particular that you're looking forward to see?
So for me, I guess from the Agile side, it's really great to have Don Reinerston back again. The way I've always described Don is he's the guy that explains why the whole Agile and Lean stuff works. His book, The Principles of Product Development Flow, is the Bible to actually explaining it, not sometimes the watered down process type stuff that you often see, but actually the key to why we actually do the things we do. He's got all the principles that explain why doing things in small batch sizes and why you have to do less and why pulling things rather than pushing things and those type of things is he's the guy who really worked all that stuff out to prove that it actually works. So to have him back again, he was out in 2013, I think it was. So to have him back again is really awesome.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. I can't believe people still think waterfall is the right way to do things. Yeah.
Although
I still think waterfalls are right in certain scenarios.
Well. Yeah.
If you want to get into that debate, I mean, because I used to be fairly, I guess, agnostic about some of these things, and I'm not one for the whole waterfall bashing thing because it was right for the time. It's just that fast forward to 2015, you just can't wait the amount of time that we used to for anything anymore because of the speed of putting apps onto mobile devices or continuous delivery or those type of things. So having the waterfall versus agile discussion is a bit moot. But what waterfall does give you is that if planning is critical, if that risk factor is really high, then it's not so much whether you do waterfall or agile, but now to me it's, well, where's the risk profile you're willing to take? So do you want to do a little more work up front and delay things just a little bit longer to have a little more confidence on something? But you still want to apply agile practices, particularly in relation to the development process itself. So to me, it's not, I think that whole waterfall versus agile thing is, it just doesn't hold true in 2015 anymore. It's now, where is your risk profile and what different practices are you going to employ in order to deliver this thing appropriately?
Yeah, you're right. You're dead right. And I can almost guarantee that the risk profile at NASA, they're probably leaning more on the waterfall side.
Well, to a certain extent, yes, but they still do a lot of experimentation there. So if you really want to apply, you know, lean startup type stuff, you know, they've got to throw things against the wall and try it. I mean, it's just that they're doing experiments in controlled environments. So whilst there's still a lot of planning, absolutely. I mean, if you're going to put a rocket up there, there is, that is a big bang project, right? You get one shot at it. But all the stuff that happens before that is very iterative. They've been doing iterative development for a long, long time. So I think sometimes we get lulled in this false sense of security or,
I wouldn't say that. I think we can do any project type badly, you know.
Well, yeah. Yeah. I mean, all Agile does is lay to deliver more crap faster, right?
Yeah.
You're thinking of the half-assed Agile. Is that what you're thinking, Darren?
Oh, the half-assed, yeah. I do find that some Agile places do seem to move towards that, or that I like to call it fragile project management.
I believe there is a half-assed Agile manifesto.
Yeah, there is. It's very funny. And then there's because with the Agile with the pom-poms, if you know what I mean. So it's all about the process and procedure with no comprehension of the value while you're doing it. So they are drink the Kool-Aid. I'm glad there's somebody here to explain why to drink the Kool-Aid, not just drink the Kool-Aid.
Yeah. So. Well, or even more so, not even why to drink the Kool-Aid, but just to tell you how the Kool-Aid's made. And if you don't want to drink the Kool-Aid, then here's the recipe for the cup of coffee you might want as well. And that's the awesome thing about Don. The other guy who is awesome to have back again is Dan North. So we obviously know him as the guy.
He's
who,
the BDD guy, wasn't he?
He originated in air quotes BDD. There was a bunch of people kind of working on it, but he probably wrote the first real blog post that got any interest and worked on a lot of some of the early tooling that was around. In the more recent past, he has been doing a little more in the Agile space, but when he was out a couple of years ago, he was sort of pushing the barrel on something called Accelerated Agile. I'm really interested to see his talk. He's coming back to talk a little bit what he calls delivery mapping. And one of the things that we're seeing a lot in the Agile community is people are trying to scale Agile, and again, that's a whole debate that we probably spent the last year and a half on the Revolution podcast, debating and all the different frameworks and things that are coming around it. But regardless of where you sit on that fence and whether you pick those things up or not, at some point there's going to be a discussion you have to have on we need to go bigger, or we need to combine with another team, or those type of things. And I think what I like about what Dan's sort of talking about more recently is actually stopping the discussion about, well, we need a new framework, which does make them more waterfall-like in some respects, and actually think about, well, actually, do we actually know what the problem actually is? And so I think he's going to shine a bit of a light on that, and he's got some interesting things to say in that space, so I'm really looking forward to that, and hopefully a few people will take something away from it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that'd be pretty cool. Yeah, I also want to see Dean Wolper. Wolper? Is that how you pronounce his second name?
Dean Wompler?
Wompler, yeah. He was pretty good. Was it last year or the year before? I can't remember now. But I really enjoyed his talk, the last one I went to.
Yeah, he was out for Lambda Jam the last time. He was out last year.
Oh, so Lambda Jam, that's where I saw him then. So yeah, I'll be looking forward to see him as well.
Yeah, you guys done much with Spark at all?
Not yet. I keep looking at it, but I haven't. I don't really have big data yet. I just have slightly large data, chubby data,
slightly overweight data.
Yeah, It's going to take a while for me to get to that kind of big data scale. But also, I'm allergic to Scala, so.
Oh, it's not that bad. But no, so I've been talking to a couple of people who are big into machine learning, and Scala, it seems to be the tool of choice. So I am still interested in coming back to have a look at that. But I'm a little bit like Lee at the minute. We're in startup land, so I don't really have it. At the minute, I don't really have any big data needs. To say I've got chubby data is probably a bit of a falsehood at the minute. It's pretty meek data. But we'll just have to wait and see.
You have ambitions of chubby data.
Yeah, well, at the minute, the DevOps is probably more useful for me because I'm doing a lot more DevOps stuff. So Angular, or not Angular, sort of Ansible and Docker and stuff like that. So be interested to see what that...
Yeah, there's a few Docker talks. I think there's at least one that I saw, and that's kind of a new thing. There wasn't anything on Docker last year, I think.
Oh, there was. There was some Docker ones last year.
Oh, okay.
There are a couple that went into that territory, none specifically on Docker. So, yeah, this year there's a little more Docker. Because it is a hot topic.
Yeah, it's a fairly new topic as well, I suppose. Mm. Sort of, I think it's been around for a little while now, but people have sort of it's gotten to a maturity level where people are using it in production significantly now. So
yeah, I was using it today to do some production deployments. So I'll be keen to figure out what I'm doing wrong. Learn from someone else's mistakes, you know?
Probably everything.
Yeah, probably. But yeah, that's the way it goes the first time around. I'm not really a specializing at this point. There's actually quite a lot. I have a problem with this conference because I generally, there'll be like a speakers where I'm not that bothered, and then there'll be like two or three on and different channels. I almost want to go to all three so I can see all the channels or all the tracks. But, yeah, I don't think my wife would allow me. She'd, yeah.
Hey, listen, I travel with the conference to three cities, and my always hope was that I'd get to see the entire conference, and that doesn't even happen. And I edit the videos, and I still don't get to see the conference. So, yeah, it's a hard...
Well, that's probably worth plugging, Craig. That there are videos after the fact, right?
There are indeed. So yeah, it gets recorded, and you can watch those after the fact, which is always good. And there's always interviews with the speakers by our awesome podcast as well, that you can always go back and hear what's going on. Yeah. But you're saying about Docker. So Adrian Mowat's interesting. He's a guy who wrote the Using Docker book. But I think what I like about his talk is that this isn't just like, you know, Docker 101, but actually the whole point around security, which is something that I don't want to say I haven't thought about it, because that's not correct, but I probably haven't thought about it as much as I probably should. So I'm interested to kind of hear what he's got to say about that.
Yeah, because you can extend and extend, and you don't really pay any attention to the ones underneath. So it's the same with Ansible playbooks as well. So I've actually been looking at trying to strip everything out and almost go as bare bones as I can.
Hmm. And the other one that is good, that is a really good talk, was we had a version of this at the Yale West conference, is the guys from What If, so the local guys, Matt and Alex. Guys and gals, I should say, Matt and Alex, but they're from Expedia. And some of the cool stuff they did at What If initially, and now moving to Expedia, about how they actually made the cultural change into DevOps, which is really interesting. So this is an extended version. I've sort of seen bits of this talk. They had a short version at Yale West. I've also seen it at a local meetup. And yeah, every time they sort of give it, there's more and more stuff that goes into the talk, which is really awesome. But what I like is this is kind of like the developer sysadmin standoff, because Matt's a software engineer and Alex is a sysadmin, and how they sort of both had to come together to make this work, which really is what DevOps is all about.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. Or if you're the only person in a small startup, then you get to do DevOps because there's no one else.
That's right.
Nah, right, Lee?
But you also get to sweep the floor too, don't you?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, but it's a lot of fun, right? That's part of why we do this, surely.
Yeah, I was.
That's what I keep telling myself.
Well, I did do a week in a corporate. I won't say who. And after a week in a corporate office, I was a bit like, oh, I don't know if I want to do this again. Like,
you've got the startup bug.
It's not. It's just everything just seemed to take so bloody long, and it was just like,
You don't have that the same level of responsibility.
Yeah, it's just everything to say, well, we'll have to wait for this and we'll have to wait for that. And I'm a bit like, just get out of the way and get some done. So, yeah, I don't know. I might stay in startups for a little bit longer until the bubble bursts.
Which is imminent, right?
Possibly. So I might have.
A little scary, but we'll make it through, surely.
Yeah. Well, I need to go do my next startup, get some funding before the bubble bursts. Oh, that's a problem for next year. Anyway, coming back to Yao. One of the big things that I was quite pleased about, although I don't need it this year, is the Yao Bubs, which I think is just an awesome idea. So you're actually bringing childminding at the conference. Was that done last year, or is this the first year it was done?
No, it's the first year it's done. So, we've always had, babies at the conference. So we had one of the speakers who had his family on the tour with us last year, and one of our staff members as well. So there's always been little ones around in some respect. But where this kind of got driven from was earlier in the year there was another conference where again one of the speakers and his partner brought their baby, and the baby was very well behaved. Throughout it all. In fact, the speaker was kind of using the baby as a bit of a, I don't want to say a prop because that's going to sound really awful, but was referencing the whole process about actually how they came about having this baby as part of their talk. Not the specifics you're thinking about, but the fact that how there's a lot of planning and all that type of stuff was in the talk. But what had happened was inside one of the talks, obviously the baby got a little restless, and the mother took the baby out pretty quickly. But what escalated on social media was in this very quickly this whole like baby gate type of a thing about should we have babies at conferences, and I pay a lot of money to bring my to come to a conference, I don't want to have to deal with a baby, and so this whole thing sort of started up, and the different sides of the conversation, they're valid. They're valid on both sides. But I guess one of the things we've been really trying to think about at Yao is the whole diversity thing. And one of the things we've always been conscious of is what types of things are stopping people coming to the conference. So we've always used volunteers, for example, and university students to volunteer, and then we offer them tickets to. To come and see part of the conference in the different cities, and we also try to support things like the user groups and those as well. And then earlier in the year, we did to get more female speakers. We did we ran a competition, which part of that prize was to spend a day on some speaking training, because one of the feedback items we were getting from just from people in general was that. Some females just are a little nervous to get up and speak in front of a crowd. So we've done a few things like that. But in trying to sort of build the diversity and on top of female speakers, we went, well, what else might be stopping people? And so that's where the Yao Bubs idea came from, which was, well, if we actually put child minding on site, then perhaps more people can come and they can sort of go and see different talks with ease and know that they can jump back and forward as much as they want, and trying to make that affordable as well was the other key thing around that. So essentially the program, as soon as we announced it, we very quickly got sponsors for it in each city. So they helped subsidizing the cost, and just for a small fee, which is basically just an administration fee, really just for all the paperwork, you can now bring your child to the conference, enjoy the conference, and know that they're in good care.
That's great. I don't need a babysitter at this point, but yeah, if I did, I'd definitely be taking you up on this service.
And I should say that the service obviously is accredited childcare providers who are doing that. So
it's not DevOps people looking for something.
it's not a poor startup engineer who needs a bit of extra money on the side.
I need some kid testers throwing iPads in front of them.
Yeah. That's right. Yeah, press this. Yeah, no, nothing like that. So it's a It's all fully accredited and all those type of things. So, and as I said, the other good thing is you can go back in and out as much as you like, throughout the conference. So, it's all really about experimentation and trying new things. So, hopefully people who will get some value of that service will use it.
Cool. Doesn't look like we have any workshops this year in Brizzy. Is that right? They're just down in Melbourne and Sydney.
They are again, unfortunately. There are some good workshops though for those who are in other cities. But yes, only in the two cities again this year. Some of the speakers we talked about before. So Dean Wampler is doing a 1 day Spark crash course, which I think if I wanted to learn Spark, that would probably be the quickest way for me to get my head around it. Don Reinerson's back doing his lean product development workshop. That really helped me. I saw his earlier version of that workshop when he was out a couple of years ago, and sometimes trying to make sense of his book, because there is lots of calculations and equations in there, although it is it's still very readable. Spending a day with him is really awesome. It really unravels a lot of things that you just can't get in a 1 hour talk. And a lot of interest around the Docker and the microservices workshops as well. By Adrian Cockcroft, James Lewis, and Sam Newman, all three of them are running workshops.
Very cool.
What's the website again?
You can find out all your information at yaoconference.com.au, and there's a separate page for each city.
So the dates, just to remind people, in Melbourne it's the 3rd and 4th of December, in Brisbane it's the 7th and 8th of December, and in Sydney it's the 10th and 11th of December. We'll all be there at the Brisbane one, and Craig and the others will be there at everyone.
Yeah, I'll be at everyone. We'll actually be probably doing the majority of our recording in Brisbane and Sydney probably this year, but yes, we'll between us all we should get a good coverage of those speakers and what they're up to, which is good.
Yeah, and it's nice to have a beer with them as well.
Indeed, yeah, and that's one of the things that even I know you guys have said this before as well. Even before I was working with Yao, is the fact that the speakers are so accessible. That's a key thing about it, is that none of these speakers are on big retainers that are sort of coming in getting paid their tens of thousands of dollars and leaving again. They're all here because they want to be here. They all enjoy seeing the talks. I'll quite often hear them as we're moving between cities, actually saying, I want to get to that talk. And because sometimes when they're at home in North America, because they are at home, then they do fly in and fly out. But here, because they go on the road show, and we try to look after them on their journey, get them to see a bit of the country as well. They really enjoy it. So for them, it's just as much about being part of the conference as everybody else. So they actually really enjoy that. So I always say to people, if you come to the conference and you don't get to speak to, insert your rock star name here, then you've done something wrong, because they're all approachable, and they're all actually love to have a chat and talk about the things that they're up to or the questions that you have.
We're at the convention center again this year.
In Brisbane, the convention center.
In Brisbane, I always find it's funny when we're interviewing them and we're speaking to them and we ask them if they like Brisbane, and they're so impressed with South Bank, if you know what I mean. They just go for a jog or whatever around the hotel and the whole South Bank area, and most of them are like, Australia is amazing and Brisbane is fantastic. or else they say it's too bloody hot, one of the two.
Yeah, the interesting thing is it sort of gets faster as they move along. So they come into Melbourne, and for some of them, depending on where they've got, but if they come a little early, they get to spend a bit of time in Melbourne. But essentially, we pack them up following the conference and bring them to Brisbane. But they got no choice but to see Brisbane, because we fly them in on Saturday. So they've got Sunday. And what we've done the last few years is taken them out on a catamaran out into Moreton Bay, for the day. So they get to kind of see that. And just, the other thing is, yes, the conference center in Melbourne is at Albert Park, which is very nice. But if you want to get into the city, you have to catch a tram or get a taxi cab, whereas South Bank in Brisbane is really accessible. And when we go to Sydney, this year we're actually at a new venue. We're at Australia Technology Park, but their hotel's at Coogee Beach, which is very nice. It's a nice place to kind of end. But again, getting backwards and forwards to the conference centre is not as easy. So they all like Brisbane because they can get out and see things, that they can wander around the South Bank and see cool stuff, and they get a little bit of time to relax while they're there as well. So most of them usually have a soft spot for Brisbane.
My favorite was Scott Hanselman. He was absolutely blown away by the City Cats in Brisbane.
He was good fun.
He's the kind of guy who, I think, if he sees something that really piques his interest, he'll jump on it. So, he was a great guy to hang out with.
Yeah, I actually looked at Azure after his talk. I never thought I'd look at Azure platform, but he was that good that I went and checked out that Microsoft platform.
So job done.
Job done. Yeah. And he also showed me how to use my digital audio recorder a bit better. Pro podcasting tips.
There you go.
Yeah.
And speaking of, obviously, he's from the Microsoft side. This year we actually do have a representation. We've always sort of had things in that field, but we've actually got very .NET and Java specific things. So we've got Georgia Saab, who is reasonably high up in Oracle, around the JSE and those type of things, mm-hmm. and also Mike Magruder, who's the he's now at Facebook, but he was the Microsoft CLR architect. So some interesting stuff there, and obviously Mads Torgerson, who's the program manager for C#.
I did see a funny poster from a conference. I'm not sure which one it was at. It said, "Any unattended laptops will be upgraded to Windows 10."
Well, speaking of which, I actually upgrade. I'm slowly upgrading my machines to Windows 10. It's not too bad,
Yeah, I've had no problems with it. Yeah. I've heard others that have had problems with it. I'm trying to remotely try and fix somebody's Windows 10 installation right now, which has gone bad. I think Windows 8 to 10 has actually been quite smooth. I think Windows 7 to 10 has a few more bumps.
Don't tell me that, Craig.
Well, I went from 7 to 10, and I don't have any problems. But to be honest, I'm not using it that much. I'm mostly on my Mac doing development work. My wife uses it, but no real problems.
Should I upgrade? Give me a little, just a quick review. Should I upgrade from 7 to 10? Is it that? Obviously, at some point, I will have to upgrade, but it's not that good, right? Surely.
I didn't notice a huge difference, to be honest. But
no, I didn't. It seemed pretty smooth. I didn't notice much difference to me. It all seems to have worked so far, so...
I found 7 to 8 particularly was, I was probably one of the few people in the world that actually didn't mind 8, particularly 8.1. 8 was a bit clunky, although I lived with it, but 8.1 I actually quite liked. But I found just little things like the File Explorer to be a lot more snappy. I do notice the difference on particularly machines that are that have got a few years under the belt. I actually notice 10 to be a little snappier.
Oh, okay.
That's cool. Interesting.
Yeah, look, I may have to do it. On Craig's recommendation.
Just feels a little more modern. I've updated a bunch of machines, but the only small problems I've seen is there's a couple. I had an Acer laptop that through the process, I actually had a relative bring the machine to me because he'd upgraded his partner's machine, and she got very grumpy at him because the thing just would turn on and go blank, and I could see the hard drive, but I couldn't figure, and obviously I could get into the reboot mode, but I couldn't figure out what was going on. So I backed the whole thing up. I thought, okay, maybe he's just done something crazy. Maybe he's turned it off during the install process. And this is probably about a 5 or 6 year old machine. So I got through all the process, redid it, and the same thing happened to me. And would you believe what actually was in the end was, as it was upgrading, there was something wrong with the video card, and it was essentially the screen was turning off, like the brightness was turning down, and just by hitting the function key and whatever responding key it was, actually got the screen back up. But it was completely unobvious that was actually what was happening. So I wasted a good day and a half trying to rebuild that machine numerous times until I realized
that's devious. That was the
problem. So it reminds me of Scala errors. Sorry, just trolling another language.
Yeah, we tend to do that quite a bit, Craig, on the podcast.
Oh yes, I listen. I know.
They haven't come to the light, that's all.
Yeah,
that's right.
I'm actually surprised. I was overseas last week, and I was just talking to a few people, and I'm actually getting surprised the more and more people I'm hearing who are actually are going down the Scala route now. It did used to be kind of like, you know, just, you know, a couple of people here and there playing around with stuff. But, you know, the number of large corporates who are accepting it, and usually the question I ask almost every one of them is like, oh, how'd you get that signed off? And everyone's just like, oh, they don't know any difference. It's just JVM. So, yeah, it's one of those, yeah. It is one of those things where you can get all the benefits of a much better language. But, you know, if you're on the JVM without having to go through all the hassle of, you know, getting sign-offs and those things.
Yeah, I think we've spoken about it in the past. I think that's the big killer feature. The fact that it's interoperable with all Java stuff and then gets on the JVM means you can just bring it in piecemeal and there's no big purchase order or licensing or, you know, big tech change.
But the interrupt's a bit oversold. It says it interrupts and you can kind of make it interrupt, but it doesn't really work.
No. This is the marketing. This is why it's going to be successful.
But I'm just saying, in case anyone falls through a marketing spin, Darren, I'm telling you.
No, I meant that's why I think it does so well. But yeah,
I know.
Yeah, I've played with it. I don't know. I still keep wanting to go back to it, but the implicit type system doesn't always work, and it annoys the shit out of me.
It'll be interesting to see how I guess it's sustainability because you're right, Craig, there are a lot of big corporates who are adopting it, especially in San Fran, Silicon Valley area, like Twitter and things like that. It'll be interesting to see just how far it goes.
But even
probably
locally,
the next 5 years.
Even locally, I'm hearing lots of shops that maybe I wouldn't have thought, and the shops that I would have thought maybe still sitting on Java 6 or something stupid, who are playing around with it in different places and on reasonably high profile bits of work. So I think it's good to see, because sometimes the change over time for a lot of languages, unless they're forced, is sometimes a bit too long, particularly in the large corporate areas.
Yeah,
there was that article recently about NASA still needing Fortran developers, I think it was, or something like that.
Yeah, I was just reading a tweet just before we came on, saying someone asking how would they find a Fortran developer, and. My response was the retirement home, but
yeah, that's right. So I mean that is tend to happen, doesn't it? It does tend to happen.
Yeah, I don't mention anywhere that I've got COBOL experience. Oh crap! I just mentioned on the podcast.
Well, when you get to retire, Craig, there'll still be those COBOL systems out there, and it'll get you a nice little retirement safety net.
I ran away from COBOL as fast as I could. it was enough to get me a job, and then I did everything I could in my power to get away from it.
Yeah. Nice. I mean, I still believe that Java's going to be my retirement income.
Yeah, Java. Java's still got it's had a revival of recent years, like quite a revival. I've seen a lot of people sort of touting the benefits of Java, little resurgence.
A lot within the microservices stuff in particular.
Yeah, definitely. Spring's done really well in that microservices area.
I think it's still the JVM that's really the killer part of that, though. I think Java's just the fact that you can't go on, because developers are in such short demand, short supply. If you're on the JVM, you're pretty well guaranteed to be able to find somebody. Whereas if you're using some, weird language that only three people and a dog know how to do, it's always a lot harder. So. That I think the JVM is the buoyant part, and if you do want to go and do something a bit different, if you do want to go and do Groovy or Clojure or any of those type of things, then you've still got the protection that'll still run on the essentially the same runtime. And I think Android's helped as well.
Right. Yeah. Of course.
Definitely. Definitely.
Cool. Well, we've probably been talking for a while. How long have we got, Aaron? About 30 minutes, 40 minutes.
Yeah, probably about 40 minutes or so.
Was there anything else you guys wanted to chat about?
No.
No, I think we're all yowed out.
Well, yeah, that'll be after the 2 weeks of conferencing, I think, Craig. then you'll be really hard out.
That's it. Well, if anybody in the Agile Revolution's got this far, then this thing once a year is usually my sneaky little thing to go, hey, development still exists, so come and come listen to development podcasts every now and again. So if anyone's still on it on our channel listening to this, then kudos to you. you learned something, right? And if not, they're busily Googling, what's a Scala?
I bought one of those.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Let me buy 10.
Anyway, thanks very much for coming on the show, Craig.
Thanks, guys.
And, we'll see you at the conference, and, we'll be there too. So hopefully we'll see you there. Hit us up on Twitter. I'm at Darren Rogan.
I'm at Ben Edwin Morgan.
You can get me at Aberax.
And I'm at SmithCDAU.
And what handle can we get at the Yao conference on?
You can get Yao at Yao_Oz.
All right, well, thanks for that. I guess we'll wrap it up there. Hope you guys enjoyed the show.